FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
And welcome back to the Financial Survival Network. It's Carrie Lutz, and it is January 5th, 2015. That means it's time to figure out how we did last year. In 2014, we need to do a major market review with Mickey Fulp, figure out what the markets did in 2014, the winners, the losers, and the break-evens. And Mickey, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Carrie. Good to be back.
Hey, good to have you. So, man, if the markets were, I would call them milquetoast in 2013, very, very just stable. They certainly weren't that in 2014, were they?
No, the major markets were up. The Fed's continues to build the New York stock market bubble. So the Dow was up 7.5% over the year. S&P 500 up over 11%. Now, they were both relatively flat over the month of December, although the Dow did hit 1,800. It's backed off from that now. Big winner for the year was NASDAQ, up over 13%. You know, it's still approaching its all-time high of, about 5,000, a couple of hundred points off of that. What really lagged behind and is real concern to me are the small caps, as shown by the Russell 2000, only up 3.5% for the year. And tell you the truth, I would attribute that to things such as Obama's Affordable Health Care Act, and which is not really affordable for very many people unless you're subsidized. But there's been, you know, we all know about the increasing regulations that are being thrown upon small business. And that's not good, because it's really small business that drives the economy and drives rallies and turnarounds in the economy. Meanwhile, the Toronto Venture Exchange got hit pretty bad in the last quarter or half of the year. You know, at one point, about 6 months ago, or maybe even 4 months ago, hit an all-time high, and it's backed off from there. And that's strictly because of low oil prices. Didn't really know this until I researched it a couple of weeks ago, but 40% of Canada's export revenues are oil, and most of that goes to the U.S. So, and finally, we come to the Toronto Venture Exchange, and it had just a brutal last 4 months of the year, down 24%. Down 25% over the year. The only positive that I can take out of the fact that we hit a record low on December 16th of 640 on the index is every year, and I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago in a piece called Why I Dig the Dog Days of December. We always get a rally post mid-December, which continues into the new year. And so that is happening right now. And so we expect a better first quarter if past is prologue. And finally, in the markets, we have the emerging market index down almost 9% over the half, minus almost 5% over the year. And that can only be attributed to weakness in emerging market countries. China is focusing on a slowdown of growth and an increasing paradigm of domestic consumption. So from that point of view, the emerging markets are not looking good right now.
No, they're not. And well, one thing's for sure, though, the energy prices, energy costs decreasing is a net positive for most emerging markets, because expanding markets require large amounts of energy, and lower costs definitely are helpful in that regard.
Well, yeah, but the problem, at least in some of the emerging market countries, is a significant amount of their revenue especially some of the have-nots in OPEC. 95% of their export revenue is in oil. So there's a significant number of the BRICS, if you will, that are in bad shape right now, including Brazil. Russia is being devastated by low oil prices. Indonesia is being hurt, although it is recently, or last year or so, become a net oil importer, but it still has significant amount of oil imports. But we'll get to the oils here in a bit. Let's go on with our currencies. Dollar index hit a five-year high at year-end, over 90. We haven't seen that for, as I said, over 5 years. And it's continued to go up today. It's at 91.5 today. But that's 13% rise over the year. Concomitantly, as expected, the euro is off 12% over the year. The real loser in monetary space, and that's assuming, like I do, that Bitcoin is not money, was the Treasury bill rate down to 2.17%, down 29% year over year. Despite the end of quantitative easing, interest rates continue to go lower. And geez, at some point, this bond bubble's got to go, I would think. And then Bitcoin, which we've already opined is not money, it finished the month down 15%, wiped out the gains of 16% the month before. But the month before that, it was down 16%. So it's quite volatile.
Yeah.
But the joke that really is Bitcoin, another tumultuous year, down 58%.
Well, Peter Schiff, our friend, said that Bitcoin's the only currency that's performed worse than the Russian ruble.
Well, that's a good point. Yes, and it has.
And but hey, it's a cryptocurrency. It's in its infancy, and look, we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll only go up from here, but maybe it'll go into parity with the dollar. Maybe everything will go into parity with the dollar, Mickey, the coming year. Who knows? Right?
It certainly looks that the US dollar is exerting its influence as the 800-pound gorilla on the block, and it still remains the world's reserve currency.
That's the key. And, all of these countries that borrowed in dollars, expecting the dollar to become worth less over time, actually signed their own death warrant, because effectively they shorted the currency and they didn't hedge on the other side. And they created the demand for the dollar to lift it up. And now they have to pay back in more expensive dollars. So their short went awry. And, hey, sometimes in trading, things don't go as you had hoped. And, that's what happens when you sell the dollar short. So.
Well, you should never speculate on a hope and a prayer to begin with, Gary.
Yeah.
That's not a sound investment strategy.
No, it's not. No, it's not. And who would have thunk, though, 6-7 years ago when we had the crash and it looked like the dollar was headed for the dustbin of history, which it probably still is, but nothing works the way that you think it's going to. The future is always uncertain, as somebody once said. And, there's still a few tricks left in the Federal Reserve, in the world's central banks, and don't think that you can beat them at the game, at least not just projecting, extrapolating what's happening now into the future, because it's just not going to work. It never works for me, and it's probably not going to work for you. So onto the metals. Lots of interesting things there, huh?
Well, I think we can say 2014 was the year that commodities crashed. Iron ore, coal, oil and gas, copper, platinum, silver, all had double-digit losses over the year, and sometimes considerably higher than low double-digit losses. The only things that actually performed pretty well over the year, gold was down 2%. Palladium gained 12%. That has to be due solely to strength of auto demand. Meanwhile, silver bugs took it in the shorts again, down 20% over the year. Platinum, surprisingly enough to me, was down 12%. I have been buying and will continue to buy platinum if it hangs around this $1,200 an ounce range. Gold-silver ratio at our magic number of 70, a little bit more than 75 right now. The gold-to-WTI ratio is now at 22, and that's just out of whack, and that's wrong, and that will correct at some point. Once oil bottoms, it will come back. Copper was down 14% over the year. That's a four-year low. But what's curious to me is official inventories are quite low, historically low. I just did some numbers before we talked, and it looks to me like currently 317,000 ton in official inventories. That's only 5 to 6 days of world supplies. Now, we don't always know how much copper is being stored or hoarded outside of official channels, but this is quite low. Therefore, I expect a better year for copper in 2015.
Yeah.
And then finally, we will get to energy, and wow,
yeah,
what a half. What a second half. You know, reminds me of these college bowl games where the first half did not resemble the second half at all, you know. And so oil prices collapsed down 50% WTI over the half, 45% over the year, pushing $50 today. It will go lower. I at the beginning of this crash, I said $50. It's going below 50, and it looks like it's going to happen soon. How low it goes and where it bounces, no one is willing to predict right now. But you know, at some point, it's going to come back. I feel comfortable with a longer term oil price is, say, $70-$75 a barrel. What's happening right now is countries that are in a world of hurt, one of which we mentioned, have started increasing oil exports to try to solve this balance of payment debacle they're in right now, and that's Russia and Iraq. But, you know, the Saudi, in my opinion, the Saudis and the Americans are colluded here to cut Putin off at the knees. He got a little big for his britches, although he's not a very big guy. He's about my height, so he's a short guy, but he's gotten even shorter here over the last few months.
Yeah, well, you know, it's ironic. When you see this type of price collapse, you would think, oh, it's going to result in less supply coming into the market. And in fact, what happens is, initially, you will have greater supply coming into the market, like you said, because the weaker members, the weaker exporters, get desperate and they just dump, trying to get every last dollar that they can. And in fact, production increases initially, and then cutbacks occur in the marginal production, and then you start to see supply diminish. And, you know, what's your guess? A year and a half till supply cuts back and prices start to go up? A year?
I'm thinking a year to year and a half of very low oil prices. But at some point, production will come off. We'll see a slowdown in growth of U.S. shale oil production. I still think we're going to approach 10 million barrels a day this year. But at some point, drilling will slow down.
Here's the thing,
The thing about these U.S. shale oil producers, debt is of concern. but the smart ones have hedged production out.
Exactly.
2015, 2016. If you look at some of these mid-tier shale oil producers, they're hedged probably an average of about $85 a barrel. And that gives them really good netbacks. An oil company I bought just before the end of the year, focused on Canadian shale oil, is hedged to 2016, the end of 2016, at an average of $95 a barrel, and they're hedged both ways, you know. So, it will be a while before North American shale oil production is going to come off. And exactly. Otherwise, these low oil prices is very good for the U.S. economy. You know, I hit Sam's Club on New Year's Eve so I could, with my company vehicle, and gassed it up at $1.
Yeah.
And who would have thunk that a year ago, huh?
How much did you fill up
for? $1.81 a gallon.
Yeah, we're at like around $2 and change in Florida. And let me just go over those hedges again, because Dr. Frankenstein, our resident petroleum engineer expert here, his company is hedged at $100 a barrel for about 80 some odd percent of their production going out about 18 months. Mm-hmm. And not only does that ensure that their existing production is going to continue, what enables them to do is increase production, because there's no reason not to increase production, because their marginal production, their cost per barrel is $32 to produce. Yep. So down to 50, they don't really care. They're just going to keep producing as much as they possibly can. And they're, I don't want to name the company, it's out in the West, and they're just full tilt producing every possible drop they can. And they're by no means unique. So a lot of what's happened here, or what's happening in the shale oil patch, is really misperceived by the public and by large portions of Wall Street, thinking that there's going to be this instant slowdown in energy prices. It ain't happening.
No, it won't happen instantly. I mean, where it's going to hurt, we're going to see drill permits drop off here in the first 6 months this year. We're going to see drill rigs idled. And so that will slow down growth, because we're not going to be drilling as many wells. And so, but that's probably at least a year and a half out before we see this effect of lower drilling in 2015. So, oil business is fine in the U.S. There will be some smaller shale oil producers are going to go bankrupt because of their debt loads. But those were, if that happens, those end up being the mismanaged companies that speculators should not have bought into to begin with. The real problem with oil business is, because it's such a high capex affair to drill an oil well, is they get these revolving lines of credit, and some of them can take on tremendous debt loads, and when oil prices fail, they can go bankrupt. But smart companies don't do that. They manage their debt with a good ratio for their cash flow.
Yeah, of course. And so you're going to see that a lot of things changing, but the foreign producers, unhedged, who are high cost, are just going to get decimated. And you're just going to see majors picking up a lot of cheap properties around the world. And it's not the end of the world by any stretch for the oil market. And these majors have been waiting for these things, picking them up distressed, for generations now.
Well, it's not only going to be the majors. Yeah. There's going to be the cannibals in the mid-tier sector are going to go out and acquire distressed assets too. So let's move on here with Henry Hub Gas, a really big loser for the quarter and the month, 25% over the month, 27% over the quarter, 29% over the year. I mean, Henry Hub closed on New Year's Eve at $3 a million BTU, and inventories are high. You've had a very mild winter. Well, I said you because I still associate you with living in the New York, in the tri-state area, which you haven't for a year.
A couple of years now. And it has been a very mild winter down here in Florida.
Well, and in the northeast tier of states and provinces. Yeah. And so that's the real reason the Henry Hub has fallen so drastically. But if you're a gas guy, there's hope on the horizon. There's some brutal storms coming down from the Arctic right now. So maybe this very mild winter will get turn colder very quickly. Who knows? Going on to uranium, it's given back a significant amount of its gains over the last couple of months, down 10% over the month, but 2% up over the year. Closed at $35 and change. This is really the slow season for uranium deals and contracts. December is always a low time. We expect activity to pick up in the new year here. But there is very interesting news out of the domestic U.S. uranium market today. Energy Fuels, the only conventional uranium operation in the United States, only conventional milling operation, has merged with one of the three U.S. domestic ISR producers, Uranors, to form the largest domestic U.S. uranium company. It's very good news for people like me, because I own shares of both Energy Fuels and Uraners. I'm happy as a clam about this. I would expect some additional consolidation in the U.S. uranium industry over the course of 2015.
And what do you think? Where do you think the prices are heading? You think they're going to head back up, and this is just a little bit of a technical pullback after it went up quite nicely?
Yeah, I really think so. You know, we've had some good news with announcement that four Japanese reactors are scheduled for startup here in early to mid 2015. So I'm cautiously optimistic and bullish on the uranium price going forward in the short term here.
That's good news, because we need a healthy uranium industry both at home and abroad. Because, you know, we need a variety of energy sources. Because, hey, you want to keep the lights on, you got to do something here, right?
Well, one of five Americans, every time he switches his lights on at night, is using nuclear power. And until recently, one of every 10 Americans was using Russian uranium. So we need to encourage the U.S. government to quit dumping inventories on the market of U-308 and foster a stronger domestic uranium industry. You know, we only produce about 10% of the uranium we own, and we get a significant amount of supply from Canada and Australia. But also on that list are Russia, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and countries that are not especially friendly to the U.S. or honest or stable.
Yeah. So, hey, on that note, I think if you find this useful, if there's any other markets that you'd like to hear us cover, you got any comments, send an email to me, khl@kerrylutz.com, or, you know, send a Twitter over to Mickey. Mickey, just give your websites and your Twitter feed info.
Well, since you started with Twitter, we'll start there, @MercenaryGeo. We, by the next couple of weeks, will have passed 40,000 Twitter followers. Website, mercenarygeologist.com. I've been quite active. I've on takes on the market, made some short-term predictions that are panning out right now. And then finally, this will be posted very quickly on our streaming audio 24/7, mercenarygeologist.fm.
All right. And just go over to financialsurvivalnetwork.com, sign up for a free newsletter, got monthly free webinars coming. Hopefully Mickey will be on the rotation another month or so. And hey, you don't want to miss them. We're going to be doing them regularly and a lot of fun, very informative. Hundreds of people sign up and they're good for everyone. So on that note, Mickey, we'll talk to you next month.
We'll talk to you next month, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.